Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprised with new topics every single week and jabbing you through your daily dose of UFC. And I've just come to realize that there are now ads rolling before our episodes, which means we can earn a little bit of money from it. I don't have any official advertisements, but I have been very blessed to have been making a couple cents every episode now, thanks to advertisements running. So please stream the podcast as often as you can to help me make a little bit more money, because I'm going to go poor and will no longer be able to do this. I am obviously joking. Let's get right on into what is actually going down on today's episode, and that is your UFC Vegas 108 predictions. We have a jam-packed card. It's one of the better Apex cards that I've seen in a while. I've gotten myself excited for it kind of just through my own research of the card. Also on today's episode, we will be dropping our official WWE SummerSlam 2025 predictions for all 12 matchups going down this weekend for night one and night two. I'm pumped. I am so pumped. It's going to be a fantastic weekend of professional wrestling. Also, we have a movie review of Fantastic Four, First Steps. I got around to watching it, saw it yesterday. I have my official review for you guys today. So, without that, I think we should just get right on into it, you know? I mean, it's been an interesting start to the summer for Zachary, as the summer's actually coming to an end. It's flown by, and I've done a lot, but also I still don't have a job, which is kind of unfortunate. Even though I don't really want a job, I want to start a company. I think I just really need to work out what I want to do, but enough ranting about my personal life. No one really cares about that. They care about new UFC fights. That's what they care about. That's how we start out every single episode of the podcast, and I have four new fights to bring to you guys today. First up, going down at UFC Vegas 109 next week, bantamweight action as Steve Ercing taking a short notice fight against Oday Osborne. That is right, the number 10 ranked flyweight and the career flyweight Oday Osborne will be meeting at 135 at UFC Vegas 109. Very interesting. I would say this has implications for the flyweight rankings, because if Oday Osborne does win, he'll go from unranked to number 10, but that's at bantamweight, so I don't know if they're going to weigh it differently. We'll have to see, but Steve Ercing, 3-3 in the UFC, is just looking to bounce back. Dude has just had the worst luck ever, you know. Fights Alexander Pantoa for the championship last year, ultimately loses a close decision. Following that, gets knocked out in round one by Kai Kara France. They give him another main event against Brandon Moreno and maybe wins one round in that fight against Brandon Moreno. Just his gets outboxed the entire time. And as for Oday Osborne, 13-8 professionally, 5-6 in the UFC. Dude has just never really been able to get a big victory. Charles Johnson and CJ Vergara are the biggest names to his record. So we'll have to see when that goes down. We'll actually be talking about that next week, so that's coming directly up. I'm probably just going to ride with Steve Ercing, maybe even to get a little knockout, but no, still a pretty good fight to have on an Apex card. Another matchup for you, Uros Medic versus Gilbert Urbina in the men's welterweight division, going down at UFC Vegas 109 as well. Uros Medic, been at welterweight most of his career, holds a win over Tim Means and Matthew Selman, but it's 4-3 as of late and just hasn't really been able to reciprocate all that magic he had when he first joined the UFC. The Serbian is 4-3 in the company, and following that, I mean, if he loses this, he might be on his way out. But he has a good matchup against the RGV Bad Boy, Gilbert Urbina. What is that nickname, Gilbert? The RGV Bad Boy? That is so random, huh? Trains out of the BMF Ranch. I have no idea what that is. Biggest win is over Orion Kosks, which is his only UFC win. I don't remember the last time. Last time he fought, he might have been knocked out by, I think, Charles Radke. To be honest, I have no idea. He is 1-2 in the company, so Gilbert Urbina is definitely going to need to win this. The biggest highlight of his career, probably almost making the Ultimate Fighter finale. I think that's all that he's really got going for him. But yes, Gilbert Urbina, Uros Medic, I would definitely ride with the Uros Medic if I could pick one of those two people. We do have two short notice matchups, which we're going to be talking about today. John Yanis is stepping in on short notice to fight Austin Bushi, replacing Francis Marshall. And in the main event, Hyung Sung Park is stepping in to replace Amir Albazi to take on Tetsuro Taiaer. That's right. Amir Albazi, the ultimate pull-out guy. There's at one point in 2023 I thought he should fight next for a title. 2 years later, this dude has never fought for a title at this point. But let's get into the final big matchup here. We'll be talking about those fights later in today's episode. The UFC Perth main event on September 27th is official. Light heavyweight action as the number 3 ranked Carlos Blackjack Ulberg takes on the number 8 ranked the Devastator Dominic Reyes. What a main event. What a main event. And immediately when everyone saw that Khalil Roundtree Jr. was fighting Jiří Procházka, you knew that this was the next fight to be had. Dominic Reyes has worked his way back from the pits of despair, a 4-fight losing streak, knocked out in 3 straight matchups. The Ryan Spann won, the worst of them all. Took over a year off, took almost 2 years off, comes back, and knocks out Dustin Jacoby in round number 1. I actually remember watching that live at some restaurant with my buddy. That was crazy. Then comes out, finishes Anthony Smith in dominant fashion, and most recently in this year, knocked out Nikita Krylov cold with a Conor McGregor Jose Aldo looking knockout. He is back, he's on a momentum streak, and 15-4, 3-fight finish, knockouts. I mean, dude, Dominic Reyes is coming in with tons of momentum, but Carlos Ulberg, this dude is on an 8-fight winning streak. He's 12-1 professionally, 8-1 in the UFC, and most recently knocked out Jan Blachowicz. Knocked off Jan Blachowicz. He beat Jan Blachowicz. He did not knock him out whatsoever. I will say the Jan Blachowicz and Volkan Ozdemir fights haven't been very Carlos Ulberg knockout-ish, but he's been impressive. He's outboxed them both, and I'll be excited to see how that matchup goes down when it takes place. But yes, Carlos Ulberg, Dominic Reyes is the biggest fight we've had announced since we last spoke about new fights being announced. Let's talk about a new movie that was recently announced and came out, and I saw it, and I have my thoughts on what I think about it, and that is the Fantastic Four First Steps. That is right, ladies and gentlemen. The latest movie in the MCU recently came out, and I saw it yesterday, and I predicted going in, you can go watch my TikTok at TheZachRuger, I predicted that it would be an 8 out of 10, and I also gave it a 7.8 out of 10. I thought it was a very good movie. I think one of my favorite things about this movie is they don't try and introduce a ton of characters. They really keep it simple to, you have the villain, you have the villain's little henchwoman, you have the four Fantastic Four main cast, and that's about it. That's really about it. You obviously have, like, minute side characters which briefly appear, but nothing to any extreme lengths. And the camaraderie of the entire cast was clearly felt. You know, Pedro Pascal, I was hesitant going in, but him as Mr. Fantastic, I really bought him. You know, Reed Richards, I saw it. Vanessa Kirby as Sue Storm, you know, she was wonderful. You could argue she might have been more of a lead in this film than Pedro Pascal. In fact, a little spoiler, in the end when they're fighting Galactus, she is actually the one giving it her all to save her child. Joseph Quinn as Human Torch, Johnny, whatever his name is. I mean, phenomenal. Just phenomenal. And of course, you had the Thing played by, oh my gosh, he's not even listed. I was reading off the cast. They don't even have the guy who plays the fourth biggest name in the film listed. Unreal. Where is it? Eben Moss Bachrock plays Ben Grimm. What's Eben even been in? Dude is not getting any love promotionally for this film whatsoever. And I thought he played an amazing, amazing role. Oh, he's in The Bear. He's in Avengers Doomsday. Days in the Fantastic Four First Steps. He was in Andor. He was in No Hard Feelings. So this guy's been in things. They need to show him some more love. I'm sorry, Eben Moss Bachrock, which, by the way, is an awesome name. He played a great Thing. I thought the Thing was great comedically and also worked for a serious tone. Apparently, John Malkovich was cut from the film. I don't really know much more than that. I am going to try and investigate a bit more about what happened to that regard. Also, in terms of the villain, Julia Garner plays Shala Ball, who is the female Silver Surfer. She was phenomenal in this. And Ralph Ineson as Galactus is amazing. And one thing I love about this is Galactus is one of the biggest bads of the entire MCU. You could argue he is the most destructive, hardest thing to stop. And the important thing at the ending of this film, the climax, when they're having this final battle and he's coming for their son, who apparently Sue Storman, Reed Richards' son, is going to be one of the most powerful beings in the MCU. I mean, Galactusly said, "I will spare your world if I can have your child." And they said no. And then the premise of the movie then is they're waiting to then protect Earth because he's going to come and consume Earth or something. But I was very perplexed at the fact that what his son is, because I mean, this is the final movie before Avengers Doomsday, and we almost have more questions than answers. But what I was trying to say is that they end up not killing Galactus. They end up just like sending him through like a space portal off to somewhere far off in the galaxy so we can come back later on.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Which I really, really liked. And yeah, Shaula Ball was absolutely great in this as a female Silver Surfer. I thought it was, the comedy was perfectly timed. They didn't try and overdo comedy. It had a very serious tone. I thought it was great. I thought it was great. I might even up my 7.8 to an 8 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes has it at 86%. IMDb at 7.5 out of 10. And Letterboxd 3.6 out of 5, which, you know, isn't too bad. I thought overall it was really good. In an hour and 55 minutes, it did not go longer than it needed to. It did exactly what everything it needed to. I there really isn't anything to nitpick in this film. I just think the one main thing that I'm more perplexed at is that now I wait until May for Avengers Doomsday, or more so I wait for the trailer for Avengers Doomsday, which I've heard the script isn't even completely done for that. They still have scenes to film. But Fantastic Four, is it the best one? It could be. It could be. It is kind of hard to outdo the other ones just because of nostalgia, but overall, I thought it was really good. Max Schockman, the director, did a phenomenal, phenomenal job. And you also have this like weird thing where Scorpion, I think his name was, or what was it? Stingray. Stingray from Cobra Kai, one of my favorite actors, Paul, I'll never think of his last name. Paul Walter Hauser, there it is. He plays like this leader of this underground world, Subterranea, which is definitely a ton of comic book references, which I thought was super cool. And just the whole idea that there's people that live below the surface and they hate the people that live up there. The people up there hate the people that live down there. I thought it was pretty funny. But the big thing to take away from this, you know, at the ending, everything is happy. The Fantastic Four are all good. And, you know, the child is safe. And you go to a mid-credit scene. Now, I had on my TikTok an end-credit scene. Apparently, mid-credit and end-credit scenes are different. They're not. They happen in the credits, if you will, which, by the way, the final end credit scene was really a jobber one. It was a joke. Oh, do not stay for the end of the movie. It's the mid-credit scene, which lasts, I don't even know if it lasts a minute. Might only last 30 seconds, but it shows Sue Storm talking to their new son, who Franklin, I think his name is, and is now 4 years later. So he's about 4 years old, and, you know, they're with Kirby. Kirby was this fun, lovable robot throughout the whole film. Great work with adding that little character. And she, like, goes, all right, we need to find him a new book to read. And shows up like Charles Darwin's, like something just to show how smart he is. Like, oh, this is his favorite. And, you know, she's like, no, we're going to find a more child book. And she goes to turn back. And as she looks to see who her son is talking to, because she hears something, he is talking to Victor Von Doom. That's right, Dr. Doom. You get your first glimpse of him in the MCU, unless they're going to reveal that he's been here all along. And he's holding up this tiny little mask to Franklin, and you can only see kind of his hood. You can only see the hood. That's all you can really see of him. And then it cuts to black and says Fantastic Four will return in Avengers Doomsday. And that's all we know. That's all we know. I'm going to try and do some more digging. You know, I'm going to try and listen to some videos, maybe come back on the next podcast episode and talk about that. Also, I'm thinking about now ranking all 37 MCU movies in a YouTube video. That would be a daunting but fun task. Man, Man, Fantastic Four, very good, highly recommended. You should go check it out. And I just think it's crazy we now have to wait for the next Avengers Doomsday movie. It's crazy we're already getting an Avengers movie. Like, I haven't felt we've had any build-up to an Avengers movie, especially when the only glimpse of the villain we've officially seen was in this little mid-credits scene. So it's just going to be something we're going to have to wait around for. But Fantastic Four, first steps, we'll give it an 8 out of 10. It was really good. And when I do my MCU movie rankings, who knows where it will land? You'll have to tune in and see. Also, what you're going to have to tune in and see is going to be WWE SummerSlam. That's right. We're already at another WWE PLE Premium Live event. This is the first ever two-night WWE SummerSlam. It is the start of this new thing to just expand the WWE, just do as many events as possible, and it is going to be massive. The official main event of night two, over the whole evening, John Cena, Cody Rhodes in a street fight. Going to be massive. Going down in East Rutherford, New Jersey at MetLife Stadium. It's going to be big. I'll tell you, this is going to be very, very big. They're now expanding into movie theaters to show this at select ones for Regal and Fandango partnership, which I don't know why you wouldn't partner with Imagine so I could watch it, but I guess not. You got 12 matchups going down. We'll start with night one and night two and drop our official predictions. And actually, we'll need to write these down this time because I'm going to be talking with my friend Tyler about this, and we always do our predictions for each episode. Maybe I should have him on when we do these episodes. Kicking off night one, you do have six matches, and what I think they're going to start the night with, I'm thinking that they might go, I don't know what they're going to start with. I assume they're going to want to start with a bang. I'm going to start off with Randy Orton and Jelly Roll taking on Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul. That is right. Randy Orton, the great, the legend killer. He is amazing. Is teaming with Jelly Roll. And Jelly Roll has gotten in the ring. He's gotten fit and he is ready to take over the WWE. Yeah, very goofy if you ask me. And of course, Drew McIntyre, awesome heel. Logan Paul, I think, has finally figured out that he will forever be a heel in the WWE, and it works out perfectly. Logan Paul is just a freak of nature when it comes to performing in the WWE. And how do I think is this match going to go? Well, I think it's just going to do everything that you want it to do. It's going to have Jelly Roll hitting good moves. It's going to have shocking moments like Jelly Roll getting hit with big moves, maybe a frog splash, maybe a claymore kick. It's probably going to have your vintage Randy Orton performances. And as much as I would love Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul to win, I would love to see the heels win this. There's just no way Jelly Roll is going to be losing. WWE does this thing when they bring in celebrities. The celebrities always win. Stevie Amell, you have the Jackass guys. You have Logan Paul when he first came into the company. You have Floyd Money Mayweather. You get Bad Bunny. Whenever you have celebrities, the celebrities always win. So you can just lock in Randy Orton and Jelly Roll, you know, you can lock that in. But the one thing that I want to see is Jelly Roll hit with a claymore kick. That is all I really want in this world. That's all I want. All I want is the claymore kick from Drew McIntyre, which essentially he just runs at you and boots his foot right through your face. But where's this going to go from here? I have no idea. You know, I would love to see Drew McIntyre go for the WWE Championship after this. I would love to see Logan Paul just keep being a little heel. And as for Randy Orton, let's continue to build him up. And maybe heading into 2026 WrestleMania, you can see him going after a world title. But I think this is how you should start the show. Randy Orton, Jelly Roll, getting the crowd going, and you start it with a bang. Now, do I think they follow that up with another tag team matchup? I'm going to say no. I think we kind of divvy up the tag team matchups throughout this show. So, what I think they're going to run next is, actually, you know what? Here's another thing. If Roman Reigns and Jey Uso is not the main event, they might start the card with this. I'm very curious the placement of Gunther, CM Punk, and Roman Reigns and Jey Uso versus Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. I am very curious to see the match placement there. But following that, I'm going to predict that they go with Tiffany Stratton and Jade Cargill. That's what I think they're going to do next. Tiffany Stratton, Jade Cargill. And Tiffany Stratton, she's been holding on to this WWE Women's Championship for a while now. Jade Cargill recently won the Queen of the Ring, and she was able to challenge whoever she wants, and she's challenging Tiffany Stratton. Now, I think a lot of people were more excited for this, knowing that Naomi could have cashed in her Money in the Bank, but now that Naomi has already done that and will actually be defending her belt on night two, people don't really know what to think about this, and the build-up to this match hasn't been good. But I think biggest party of the summer, you got to do some switch of some kind. And I think that of the two women's match main titles, the women's world titles and the two men's world titles, at least one of each will be changing hands, and I do think Jade Cargill will be beating Tiffany Stratton in this one. Jade Cargill has just been, they've been building her up for a while, she's been waiting to have the belt, and I think she'd look good with the belt, and I think this is where you kind of change Tiffany Stratton from this face champion to then the heel chasing Jade Cargill, and you can easily just have this belt flip-flop hands between these two. If there's just a one-off feud, then you can have something else take place, but I think Jade Cargill winning the belt will be another shocker to open the evening. I could also see, by the way, this opening night one and Jade Cargill winning. I could definitely see that. But my prediction, Jade Cargill beats Tiffany Stratton. There really isn't any shenanigans you can have unless Bianca Belair gets involved, but I don't see that happening at all. Following that, we will go with the Judgment Day taking on Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss to defend their WWE Women's Tag Team Championships. And people have already been saying Liv Morgan is returning this weekend. If Liv Morgan does return, it's either going to be to help Dominic Mysterio or presumably to cost the Judgment Day Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez. And I think they've been good champions. I really think they have Raquel and Roxanne. Them retaining at WWE Evolution was a shocker, a much needed shocker, but this is where you have a change take place. Charlotte Flair, Alexa Bliss. I don't know where the matches are going to be made on this card, but I do think that they will be walking out as your new women's champions for the...
I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
Tag team. It's just they need to. If you want to legitimize these two who love, hate each other, it's almost like a Kane and Daniel Bryan Team Hell No type of situation. Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss have just kind of revitalized the love for these two. You know, there's just something when you have veterans like them, and they aren't like legends like John Cena, like CM Punk yet. They're sort of just the kind of repetitious women that we've seen for so long. For them to actually feel important, it really makes these belts seem more important. And they've done it with Becky Lynch going after the IC title, and now I think they need to do it with the tag team titles by having Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss win, and I do think they will win, and I think it will be very entertaining. So Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss to dethrone Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez to win the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship. And whenever Liv Morgan's able to return, she can feud with Roxanne Perez, and I think that will be very entertaining. Following that, we're going to go with Sami Zayn taking on Karrion Kross in the next matchup, and I do think that this matchup hurts. Okay, this matchup is kind of an L if you're asking me. For one reason, there's no stipulation. Why is there no stipulation for this? Why did we have them feud at WWE Night of Champions without a stipulation where they should have had one? And they still don't have one here, and they're not SmackDown superstars. We saw their final interaction on this past episode of Monday Night Raw, and there's just nothing really to do in terms of adding a stipulation, unless you want to do it on social media. So I would love to see Karrion Kross win, but Karrion Kross is forever going to be the Chad Gable of we would love to see this guy get a championship, and the WWE will just never give him a championship. That's just as true as it can get. So I'm going to have to go with Sami Zayn to win. There just isn't much. Isn't much there to do. I'd love to see Sami Zayn use some heelish tactic, perhaps. Maybe just kind of show that he is kind of caving into what Karrion Kross wants to do, is basically turn him evil. But if Karrion Kross wins, that would be phenomenal. I would absolutely love that. But I'm just going to go with Sami Zayn winning. But if Karrion Kross wins, I will be more than overjoyed. They always give Sami Zayn the wins. They just always do. I swear unless we're talking about Bron Breakker at last year's SummerSlam, but right now Sami Zayn is more on a chase than he is of being the guy being chased. So Sami Zayn to defeat Karrion Kross, but we're going to add a little unhappy face because I would love to see Karrion Kross win. With that, we get into what I think could be the second to last matchup. It depends how you want to position the matchups on this card, because in reality you have two main events. So we're going to go with what I think will not be the main event, but what they might run either at the start. I don't really know if it's a middle type of thing. It's Roman Reigns and Jey Uso versus Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. And if this match main events, let me just tell you, if this match main events, you are going to see something massive happen. I'm just telling you right now, if this match main events, something massive is going down. And now I won't know that until they officially announce it, so I can always change my predictions until then. But on here, on Wednesday, July 30th, I, you know, have to just analyze what I think, and that is that I think this isn't going to be the main event. Now, on this past episode, you had Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed standing tall, and there is a thing in the WWE and professional wrestling, if you haven't watched it for a while, it's usually who's ever standing tall at the end of a regular program is usually the one who loses in the actual match on the PPV, PLE, whatever you want to call it. And Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed destroyed these two, Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. They really did. They ran through them. And you also had this weird segment where Paul Heyman was trying to convince Jey Uso that Roman Reigns wasn't someone to be followed. So are we seeing a Jey Uso heel turn here? Is he joining the faction now that Seth Rollins is gone? I don't know. Are we getting a Tony D'Angelo, a Ricky Saints from NXT? It's tough to say. Are we getting a returning superstar? I don't know. But the match position is going to determine what I think will happen. So if this is the main event, give me Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. I would love to see that. You have a big shocker of a reveal of another member, but, you know, Roman Reigns, Jey Uso, you only see Roman every so often, and he's going off to film Street Fighter. He won't be around for a while, so I'm going to say, I'm probably going to go with Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. It's the safe pick. You know, Roman and Jey is the safe pick, but if it's the main event, I don't really know. I just don't know what's going to happen in this matchup. I think that's what's wonderful about all of these matchups. You have no idea what's going to take place. There's really nothing predictable on the entire card, and especially here for night one, there's nothing you can really predict. So we're going to go with Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, simply going off of WWE terminology. Now, who do I think should win? It needs to be Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. You need to have them win this to legitimize them, but also the WWE loves to have Roman Reigns standing tall, and you're going to want to have some positive feelings, or at least a shocking moment happen on this event. So I think Roman Reigns and Jey Uso are going to win, but I really hope Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed aren't completely buried after this defeat. Following that, we'll get into what I think, and I think a lot of people think is going to be the main event of night one, and that's Gunther versus CM Punk. And this is just another one. You don't know. You don't know. This was originally supposed to be the WrestleMania night one main event, fun fact, and then a bunch of pivots took place with Jey Uso winning the Royal Rumble, and you had Jey Uso, Gunther, and then CM Punk would actually go on to main event. So CM Punk was always going to main event night one of WrestleMania, but here he is, I presumably think, main eventing night one of SummerSlam as well. And as for this Gunther feud, just not much. Not much has really transpired between these two. They've had a couple promos here and there. CM Punk won a little gauntlet match to even get this opportunity. Gunther's been on a crazy winning streak. And, you know, I'm just going to go right out and say it. I'm picking CM Punk to win. You know, as a CM Punk fan, I think he will win. I hope he will win. But there's a part of my mind that really makes me think they have just invested so much into Gunther. He just signed a long-term deal. And we've seen what happens when Gunther doesn't have the World Heavyweight Championship. There's just nothing to do with him. This guy is built for being a World Heavyweight Champion or chasing the World Heavyweight Championship. And if we really want to legitimize him as an actual threat, you know, where he's not beating Pat McAfee or a retired Goldberg or Jey Uso, if he's beating a CM Punk, he's going to feel much more legit. But I think WWE is all about moments. And one thing we have seen from two night events is they never have a heel and a heel win both nights. It's just something they have never done. They've always done face-face, or usually it's heel night one, face night two, vice versa, you could even say. You can go all the way back to WrestleMania 38, then you can go to 39, then you can go to 40, you can even go to 41. There's always, actually, I guess at 41, both the heels won in a weird way, but kind of a special stipulation, but I do think CM Punk is going to become the new World Heavyweight Champion, and it's just going to be a super exciting moment. I've been waiting since his return in 2023 to see him become the winner, and here's a chance for him to finally win the championship. So CM Punk dethroning Gunther is my prediction, but if Gunther wins, I also won't be surprised. My final thoughts for night one, for each of these matchups, you know, Randy Orton and Jelly Roll versus Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul. Want Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul, think Randy Orton and Jelly Roll. The main highlight from this match, I think, is going to be Jelly Roll eating a finisher. I think that will be something that is going to be what makes this match memorable. Tiffany Stratton, Jade Cargill. I think Jade Cargill should win, needs to win. If she doesn't win here, there really isn't a place for her to win elsewhere. And as for Tiffany, I think she can rebuild herself much better as a heel after losing. In terms of shockers, there really won't be anything. I will be a bit surprised if Tiffany retains, though. I'll say I will be a bit more surprised if she wins as opposed to if Jade Cargill wins. Judgment Day beating Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss, yeah, that would shock me. if they have Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss win, lose again, I definitely think they're just burying these two and they're going to start a solo feud. Sami Zayn and Karrion Kross, if Karrion Kross wins, I'll be so surprised. I'll be rooting Karrion. I'll be cheering for Karrion. I think the crowd agrees with me. We got to pick Sami Zayn to win that one. No real shockers in that one, except for if Karrion Kross actually wins. Roman and Jay versus Braun and Braun. I think there is just so much fantasy booking you can do here. It's almost impossible to actually make a prediction. So I just want entertainment. I want great wrestling. And I want moments that are going to be memorable when we look back on SummerSlam. And as for CM Punk and Gunther, give me a good match. Give me no interferences. Give me CM Punk hitting the go to sleep on Gunther, or better yet, submitting him with the Anaconda device. That's why Hope ends night number one. Now with that, we get into night number two of SummerSlam. And you can argue night two is better than night one. Now I do think people are kind of hating on this card. I think SummerSlam's massive. I think this is truly the biggest SummerSlam we've done in a while, and they have loaded it up. So, how are they going to open night two of SummerSlam? Well, I think it's a repetitious formula from WrestleMania to SummerSlam. You have another triple threat match for the Women's World Championship. Open the show and steal the show. Naomi, Rhea Ripley, Io Sky, give it to me all day, and it's Naomi. It's got to be Naomi. Naomi did not just win the Undisputed, not the the Women's World Championship, to lose it to Rhea Ripley and Io Sky. That is not happening. No, no, no. Rhea Ripley and Io Sky are not losing. In fact, I would love to see Rhea Ripley get pinned by Naomi, for goodness sakes. Naomi's going to use her heel antics to win, and I will say the biggest shocker will be if Rhea Ripley or Io Sky win, because it would just signify that WWE thinks nothing of Naomi, which I do not think is the case. So, Naomi beating Rhea Ripley and Io Sky to open the night. It could be match of the night, match of SummerSlam, similar to how the woman stole the show at WrestleMania 41. I think it's a perfect way to open up this card. Following that, what do you do next? I don't really know. I'm going to predict that this spot goes to Dominic Mysterio and AJ Styles. And similarly, I think Dominic is going to retain. I would love to see AJ win. I really would. AJ Styles having the Intercontinental Championship would be so fun. But AJ's been kind of getting the better of Dom this whole feud. There's the rumors that Liv Morgan's going to return, similar to how Dom returned to help her beat Rhea Ripley last year. And I just think you're going to have Dominic defeat AJ Styles. And it will finally be a legit name on Dom's record instead of Penta or Octagon Jr. or anyone like that. So Dominic, AJ Styles, it should be a very entertaining matchup. I'm actually really excited for this one. And I do think Dominic will retain. Should be very good, and make sure to keep it on your radar. Now, what is next? I don't know. This might actually be the opener here, but let's talk about it. The six-pack TLC match for the WWE Tag Team Championship. The match placements of this has to be very careful, because this is clearly going to steal the show. A six-pack match TLC for the Tag Team Championship. You got the Wyatt Six, your current champions. You got Andrade and Rey Fénix, this new tag team. You got DIY, Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa. You already know them. You got Fraxium, Motor City Machine Guns, the Street Profits, all legit tag teams, and it's just a flip of the coin on who we think is going to win. I mean, it could literally be anyone. It really could be anyone. I could see the Wyatt Six retaining. You know, they're not really, Dexter Lumis and Joe Gacy aren't necessarily high flyers, but they can kind of sneak in at the last moment, just kind of powerhouse their way to winning. Andrade and Rey Fénix, they're high flyers. They're also powerhouses. They can do it all, and they recently won a number one contendership matchup that ended up turning into this TLC six-man match. You also have them as a new tag team, and Andrade and Rey Fénix with the belts would be perfect. You also have DIY. DIY would be a perfect candidate. We already know that they're good. Now, I would more so like to see Johnny and Tommaso Ciampa reignite their XT black and gold feud. So I don't really think DIY is walking away with this. Fraxium, brand new tag team, called it from XT. They would do wonders with the belt. Motor City Machine Guns don't really see it. They're a legendary tag team. I would love to see them get their pay-per-view moment, but I don't really see it there. And as for the Street Profits, they recently held them. I mean, you could easily give them the belts back, but I think it's down to the Wyatt Six retaining, Andrade and Rey Fénix, and Fraxium. And honestly, I'm going to go with Fraxium. I got to do it. I would love to see Fraxium win the belt. It would legitimize them so much. I don't think WWE's going to pull the trigger, but with six teams, I've got to go for a wild prediction. So I'm going to go with Fraxium to become your new WWE Tag Team Champions. But my second pick would probably be the Wyatt Six. Third pick, Andrade and Rey Fénix. But I do think this will steal the show, so we're going to put it as the third match on night number two, just to kind of throw it in the middle. following that, only one thing can, kind of follow that up, and I think it's going to be Becky Lynch and Lyra Valkyria in their no DQ, no countout, last chance match for Lyra Valkyria to become the champion. And we're going to go with Lyra Valkyria. I really do think so. I think you can do more with Lyra Valkyria as champion. And with my predictions for this entire card, I do think the White Six have a good chance to retain. You're going to want to have title changes on both nights. So having Lyra win the belt, she can then feud with Bayley. Maybe Becky Lynch can do a feud with someone else. I don't really know, but Lyra and her are definitely going to deliver just amazing chain wrestling, good movements, just action start to finish. And if this is really the last time that Lyra Valkyria can challenge Becky Lynch, I mean, of course she has to win. If she doesn't win, then what's she going to do? Just feud with Bayley, and then who does Becky Lynch fight? There's no other women for Becky Lynch to fight unless it's like Rhea Ripley or something, which actually could be something you do. Just keep that on your radar. So we're going to go with Lyra Valkyria to beat Becky Lynch to become the new WWE Women's Intercontinental Champion. After that, what I think could be the co-main event of the evening, Solo Sikoa, Jacob Fatu. I was solo sold on Solo Sikoa retaining, but the more that we've seen, Jacob Fatu just keeps getting whooped week in and week out. I've got to go with Jacob Fatu. I just have to. And they did it at WrestleMania, having Jacob Fatu become the new United States champion. I think they're going to do a similar thing here, having him become the champion once again. And obviously, Jacob Fatu is going to be a WrestleMania main eventer. He's going to be going after the WWE Championship, the World Heavyweight Championship. He's going to be a main event superstar, but he's still in the building blocks phase. And, having him win the United States Championship, we've seen it work with John Cena. We've seen it work with Triple H. We've seen it work with Randy Orton. When you give these guys who you want to make stars those mid-card belts, it really helps build them up. So I'm going to go with Jacob Fatu beating Solo Sikoa. And, people have been saying that he might be hitting his Samoan flip or whatever off of the top of the cage onto Sikoa. Ooh, I would absolutely love that. So we're going to say top cage, jumps off, does his flip or whatever, and pins Solo Sikoa to become the new United States champion. But yeah, there's a lot of unpredictability on night number two, I'll say. But honestly, the more you think about that six-pack match, the more I just kind of want to stick with the Wyatt Six as opposed to Fraxium. But we got to ride with Fraxium because we already picked them. But following that, we get into our main event. John Cena, Cody Rhodes, street fight for the Undisputed WWE Championship. It's so uncertain. You just have no idea what's going to happen. Is Seth Rollins going to cash in? Is Brock Lesnar going to return? Is The Rock going to return? You have no idea. Is Cody Rhodes going to win, even though he's going to film a movie soon? Will John Cena's heel run as champion end here? And I'm going to be honest, I don't think they end it here. I think even if shenanigans take place, John Cena is walking out of SummerSlam as your champion. Now, I am going to predict John Cena to win, but I do want to add some stuff here, is that I do think there will be interferences. It's a street fight, for goodness sakes. It's going to be interferences. It's also going to be a lot of objects involved, which I absolutely love. I'm predicting this is a 30-minute-plus match. Okay, I predict that is what will take place. I do think another thing is that this is going to try and one-up by a large margin their Night 2 WrestleMania matchup, or their WrestleMania 41 main event, you can even say, because everyone kind of acknowledged that sucked. It was the worst match of the weekend, and that's saying a lot, because you had the New Day taking on the War Raiders, and that sucked really, really badly. You're going to see a lot of fun in this matchup, some tables, you're going to see probably some kendo sticks, some chairs, maybe even some John Cena breaking out the belt, but this could be very entertaining. Now, what do I think is going to happen? I'm going to be honest, I don't know. I love predicting when The Rock will return, or maybe Brock Lesnar will come out, but you just don't know. You don't really know, and if The Rock does return, what does he do? Just, help John Cena win, try and get Cody Rhodes on his side? I don't really know. So at the end of the day, I wouldn't be mad if we had no interferences, if these two just go to war and you have a ton of close kickouts, and eventually John Cena, using his tactics, defeats Cody Rhodes, but defeats Cody Rhodes despite it being a street fight in a normal manner. I think you're going to see a lot more of John Cena turning back to a babyface here, and a lot more of Cody Rhodes looking more heelish here. I think you're going to start to see character switches in both of them. So I think John Cena will end SummerSlam hoisting the WWE Championship, and you kind of have this parallel of CM Punk finally winning on night one and John Cena winning on night two, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, it's 2013 or 2012 all over again. So we're gonna go with John Cena to dethrone Cody Rhodes yet again. I guess, retain, if you want to say that. I guess Cody Rhodes is trying to dethrone him. But, yeah, SummerSlam should be action-packed, and I am very much excited for it. But we'll have to wait for Night 2 of WrestleMania, and while we're watching Night 1 of WrestleMania, we're going to have a second TV on, because UFC Vegas 108 will be going down. Is it the biggest event of the weekend? Heck no. We are waiting for UFC 319 to steal the show in 2 weeks. But as for this, it's an Apex card. It's a filler card, but it is important because, like every episode of Raw and SmackDown, these UFC fight nights are used to build up future talent. And of the matchups we have on here, I think it's 11, potentially 12. Every single one of them is important for the specific fighters. So we're going to go through all these matchups, drop our predictions. We went 6-6 last week. We did awful on the prelims, did amazing on the main card. And if we get 2 predictions correct, we are going to be at 200 predictions correct on the year. And if we can go +6 on this card, we will be +100 on the year for 2025 picks. So this is a big card in terms of predictions, and I'm ready to get right on into it. So, opening up the evening as the ever-exciting matchup. You know, we love seeing these. It is just, oh, so amazing. Women's strawweight action on an Apex card. I love it. I absolutely love it. Can you not taste the sarcasm in my mouth, by the way? Piera Lafiera Rodriguez takes on Ketlin Esquintadina Souza. Esquintadina. What a fun little nickname there. 10-2 for Piera Rodriguez is her professional record. 15-5 for Ketlin Souza. Both ladies are 5'3". Both ladies have a 63-inch reach. Both ladies are from the women's strawweight division. Both ladies have an orthodox stance. Yeah, these two are fairly similar in size and build. -195 is the betting line for Piera Rodriguez. Ketlin Souza is the +145 underdog. We'll start with Piera Rodriguez here. The 32-year-old was born in Venezuela but now fights out of Panama. Of her 10 victories, she has 5 knockouts. She boasts a 3-2 record in the UFC, and after going 1-1 in 2024, including a DQ loss in May of last year, where she literally headbutted her opponent, she followed it up with a win in December over Josephine Knutson, grappling her to death. All right, 10.5 minutes of control time, 8 of 10 on takedowns. She's left little to be desired, and as far as I've seen, she's been a grappler through and through in her young UFC career. And, you know, her one win is over Josephine Knutson, you know, not too impressive. Sam Hughes, Kay Hansen. There's not much love with Piera Rodriguez. This is where underdogs thrive. And this card, after I've been just lacking on picking underdogs the last 2 weeks, and it's been biting me in the butt. So this is where we love underdogs. And Ketlin Souza is kind of a perfect underdog, if you ask me. 29 years old from Brazil. 10 of her 15 wins are by finish, 8 by knockout, 2 by sub. And of her 5 defeats, she's been finished in 4 of them. Debuted in June of 2023, losing in under 2 minutes to Karine Silva. She followed that up with a win over Marnik Mann and then a submission win over Yasmin Jeraguay. Very impressive. And none other than UFC Noche, UFC 306. Fought once this year in February against Angela Hill, where she lost a very close split decision. Could have gone either woman's way. And at the end of the day, it came down to round number 2, which they gave to Angela Hill. So Ketlin Souza and Piera Rodriguez, they are very similar. They are coming off of kind of similar momentums here, if you will. And I'm just going to be picking Ketlin Souza because she's an underdog. I also, she had a lot of, like, hype coming in, and Karine Silva kind of stopped that. And I just think that she's going to be coming in with a lot more momentum than Piera Rodriguez is, despite coming in off a win. You know, grappling Josephine Knutson to death is not as impressive as losing a split decision to Angela Hill, because we've seen Angela Hill can be dominant when she needs to be. So, Ketlin Souza over Piera Rodriguez. And as much as I would love a finish, I'm thinking this is going to go the distance. So, unanimous decision victory for Ketlin Souza. Following that, we get into the first of 2 flyweight matchups on the card, and I absolutely love this one, as Rafael Macapá Estevam is back to take on Felipeinho Buñuel. Rafael Estevam, 13-0, undefeated. Felipe, 14-7. 1 inch in height for Rafael, 5'8 to 5'7. Both men have a 69-inch reach, and both men stand in the orthodox fighting position. Rafael, -500, is a massive, massive favorite on this event. Felipe Buñuel, +350. Pretty good. Pretty good stuff in this one. Rafael is 28 years old from Rio de Janeiro. He actually trains at Gym Nova Unicao, where Jose Aldo, Hannah Brau, and even former flyweight Matthias Nicolau have all trained at. Of his 13 victories, he has 7 finishes, 4 KOs, and 3 subs, and he is 2-0 in the UFC. Won on Dana White's Contender Series and then debuted in 2023. Beating Charles Johnson. He would then not fight for almost 2 years. When he came back in February of this year, he would grapple Jesus Aguilera to death, landing 11 significant strikes and 11 takedowns. Yeah, this dude's a grappler. All right, this dude is a grappler, and when you can grapple at flyweight, similar to heavyweight, it's just works. It does numbers for you, and Rafael Estevam has done it successfully so far, but he's taken on a man in Felipe Buñez, who was looking to get back some momentum when he fights Rafael Estevam. 35 years old is Felipe Buñez, the underdog, trains at Gym Pitbull, that is right, with Patricio Pitbull, who recently beat Dan Ige, just to let you know. Of his 7 defeats, he's been finished 3 times, and he's actually supposed to fight Andre Lima on this card, but Andre Lima unfortunately had to pull out. Another great rising prospect in the men's flyweight division. His debut in 2024 against Joshua Van didn't go well. Joshua Van absolutely destroyed him, but in this year, in January, he submitted Jose Johnson in round number 1 in 2 minutes. So I do think if Rafael Estevam is going to lose, this is a perfect spot for him to lose, but do I think he's going to lose? No, I do not. I got Estevam here. He's a minus 500 favorite. He's undefeated, and I mean, I think he's just going to grapple him. I think Estevam just grapples Felipe Buñez into the dirt. Felipe throws up maybe a couple submissions, but that's about all you can get. So we're going to go with Rafael Estevam over Felipe Buñez. Next one up, featherweight division. This one very short notice as Austin Bashy will be taking on John Yannis. Austin coming in minus 700. John Yannis plus 400. And yes, we mentioned earlier, Austin Bashy was supposed to fight Francis Marshall. Instead, he'll be taking on the short notice man in John Yannis. 13-1 record for Austin. 9-3 record for John Yannis. 1 inch in height for Giannis, 1 inch in reach for Bashy, and both men are in a similar position standing-wise in the orthodox position. Actually, John Giannis is southpaw, funny enough. Austin Bashy is the younger guy, 23 years old from Michigan, 8 of his 13 wins by finish, 3 KOs and 5 subs, and yes, he did lose his first professional fight earlier this year to none other than the prospect killer, Christian Rodriguez, but I mean, everyone loses to Christian Rodriguez. All men must bow to Christian Rodriguez. It's just a staple. Now, Austin did win round 1, but then eventually learned that, yeah, you're going to lose multiple rounds to Christian Rodriguez. He did win on Dana White's Contender Series in September of last year. Got a rear naked chokehold, but yeah, didn't really have much going for him when he fought Christian Rodriguez, and looked to get that momentum back against John Yannis. John Yannis, 31 years old from Texas, is currently riding a 3-fight winning streak. All those wins coming by knockout. He does have 5 knockouts of his 9 career wins, and of his 3 losses, he's only ever been submitted once. His last win was in May, and he got a round 4 TKO over Nick Aguirre. Nick Aguirre is actually a UFC veteran who once fought none other than Peyton Talbot. Look, John Yannis getting a big opportunity here, but one thing I've noticed is that people who take short notice fights are not having success this year unless they're absolute killer. So we are going to ride with Austin Bashy. Another decision here. I think this is going to be a draining start to this Apex event. I got grappling for Ketling, grappling for Estevam, and grappling for Austin Bashy. That's just how I think the night's going to start out, and I would love to see Austin Bashy maybe get John Yannis out of there with a submission, but the kid's younger, the kid is somehow more experienced, so we're going to ride with Austin Bashy. Next up, middleweight division. We're moving up in weight here as Nick Blue Collar Clyde takes on Andre Pulev. Nick Klein 6-2. Andre 9-3. 6'4 to 6'1, 3 inches in height for Pulev. He also has 1 inch in reach, 78 to 77. Southpaw with the left for Andre, orthodox with the right for Nick the Blue Collar Klein. What a fun little nickname for Nick the Blue Collar. And odds have been close all week. It's been around minus 115 each. Recently I checked today and Nick Klein is now a small underdog, so I would probably lean him more knowing that. Nick Klein is 29 years old from Wisconsin. He trains at Pura Vida BJJ, same gym as number 15th ranked bantamweight Montel Jackson. He's gotten 5 of his 6 wins by finish, 2 KOs and 3 subs. subs, and both of his losses, he has been finished by TKO. Recently, won on Damas Kattar series in October last year, 37-second rear naked chokehold, debuted on short notice, I want to preference short notice, in Seattle, and lost a round two TKO to Mansoor Abdul-Malik. But I do want to preface that Mansoor Abdul-Malik is a killer. An absolute killer. So let's not hold that against him too much. In that one, he was actually able to take down Mansoor in round number one. Funny enough, actually probably won round one, if I'm being honest, over Mansoor Abdul-Malik before having to stand on the feet and getting absolutely knocked out. So we know Nick likes to grapple. He's kind of done before. And as a short underdog, he's a good betting pick. His opponent, the man who actually beat Andrei Puliyev last time, Christian the Red Duncan, but his opponent is Andrei Puliyev, 27 years old from Russia, 7 of his 9 wins by finish, 5 KOs and 2 subs. He also won on Damas Kattar series last year, but he didn't get a finish. He did debut earlier this year in London, and he lost to Christian Leroy Duncan, and he literally just got outstruck. And that one, just little to be loved. I mean, just didn't even throw. I mean, round one, 4 significant strikes. Round three, 2 significant strikes. Dude was just not throwing. So I don't really have much to go off of for Andrei Puliyev. I mean, there just really isn't. And this, with Nick Klein being a small little underdog, I think he's a juicy little pick right there. So we're going to go with Nick Blue Collar Klein. And better yet, I'm going to say Nick gets a round two. Round one submission. Round one submission for Nick Klein. I like it. Let's do it. We have nothing to lose. And by the way, it's middleweight, so it's probably going to be a bit more entertaining than the fights beforehand. Sticking with the middleweight division for our next contest, you have the minus 220, the BJJ Hunter, some may say, Rodolfo Vieira, as he takes on the plus 180 underdog, Trayshawn Mr. Vicious Gore. Rodolfo 10-3, 6-3 is Trayshawn Gore. Both men are 6 foot, 2 inches in reach for Trayshawn, 75-73, switch stance for Gore. Vieira has the orthodox fighting position. Yeah. Yeah. Rodolfo, Trayshawn, run-of-the-mill middleweight matchup here. But winner needs a win. The winner definitely will need to win this one if he wants to remain relevant in the UFC. Rodolfo Vieira is 35 years old from Brazil and has 10 wins. He also has 10 finishes, 1 KO, and 9 subs. He is 18-6 professionally in his grappling career. And since coming over to the UFC, he has since gone 4-3. So this is going to be 5-3. My bad. This could be a must-win for him. It really is. And I do want to say his only losses, Anthony Hernandez in 2021, Chris Curtis in 2022, and Andre Petroski earlier this year. And the Andre Petroski one was just kind of a close decision at the end of the day and wasn't really that entertaining. Some were even saying that Vera should have won. It is what it is. Before that, we had 2 arm triangles from Adolfo Vieira over Armin Petrosian and Cody Brundage. But the one thing I've learned from Adolfo Vieira, he does not really have a stand-up game at all. Like, if I'm being honest, Adolfo Vieira has 0 stand-up game. So he's going to want to take this one down to the ground really early and get Trayshawn out of there. Vieira is at a 3 performance bonuses. In the UFC, all of his wins have came by finish, including 4 arm triangles. Dude has to be setting middleweight records for arm triangle submissions. But Vieira, he's talented, he's good. And by the way, he took down Anthony Hernandez 4 times. That is not an easy task to do whatsoever. His opponent, Trayshawn Gore, is back for his 6th UFC appearance. 31 years old, born in South Carolina, now fights out of Georgia. Of his 6 wins, he has 4 finishes, 1 KO and 3 subs. Of his 3 defeats, he's been knocked out in 2 of those. Debuted in 2022 against Brian Battle to actually win the Ultimate Fighter. Came up short, I will say. But entertaining, man. That was the best fight we've seen of him so far. After that, got knocked out by Cody Brundage round 1. That was bad. Then was able to submit Josh Fremm, though. Great work. November 2024, submits Antonio Tricoli. Beautiful stuff. Came back in April, and they legit set my boy up for failure, having him take on Marco Tulio. Marco Tulio killed him. The fight lasted 8 minutes and 16 seconds, and Marco Tulio landed 120 significant strikes to 17 for Trayshawn Gore. He was knocked down in both rounds. It was brutal. It was vicious. So Trayshawn is looking to bounce back. I don't know what you're going to get here. I'm going to be honest. This might be sloppy. This might be goofy. I think Trayshawn Gore is an excellent chance here, but I think Rodolfo takes Trayshawn down. Round 2 submission. Vieira over Gore. That is my final pick for this one. No need to really spend too much time on it. Following that, we're dropping back down to the lower weight classes. Bantamweight division, I've been waiting for this one. Rinya Hybrid Nakamura finally back against Nathan Fletcher. 9-1 for Rinya, 9-2 for Fletcher. Both men are 5'7", 2 inches in reach for Fletcher. 70-68, southpaw for Rinya, orthodox for Nathan Fletcher. And Rinya, -430 favorite, okay? Big favorite in this one. Nathan Fletcher is a +325 underdog. I think Nathan Fletcher could be a nice little underdog if you want to put a little bet in. Rinya is 30 years old from Japan. Of his 9 wins, he has 6 finishes, 5 KOs, and 1 subs. And he is a grappler through and through. This dude was on, I'm pretty sure, the Japanese national wrestling team. He has won a lot of wrestling awards. He is a killer in the wrestling realm. Now, on the road to the UFC, dude was a savage. 3 straight wins all in round 1, including 2 knockouts, a 33-second knockout to win the road to the UFC. He was doing amazing. Then, he's just ran into this issue where he took on Fern Garcia and Carlos Vera in back-to-back fights and couldn't finish them, which was very alarming because he was just miles better. Finally fought Muin Gafurev earlier this year and just couldn't get anything going, you know, stood with him the entire round, got outstruck in round 1, got dropped in round 2 somehow, and then round 3 started to come alive a bit, but was too little, too late, and Muin Gafurov kind of exposed him. So Rinya suffered his first professional defeat, but all the greats have lost. Charles, Max, Volk, McGregor, although everyone has lost. Don't let this discourage you, Rinya. This is the fight right here where you need to bounce back and get a dominant victory. But the similar thing is being said to the man, Nathan Fletcher. Nathan Fletcher is 27 years old from Liverpool, England, and trains at Next Gen MMA with Paddy the Batty Pimblett. Of his 9 wins, he has 8 finishes, 1 knockout, and 7 subs. Beat Zygmantas Ramaska last year to basically, it wasn't to win the Ultimate Fighter, but it was basically 2 guys from the Ultimate Fighter. So good work there. He then debuted against Cowlin Lorraine. I guess he debuted against Zygmantas, but his first non-anything having to do with the Ultimate Fighter fight was with Cowlin Lorraine, where he lost a split decision. So Nathan Fletcher's good. Nathan Fletcher is very, very talented, and in that matchup, you know, he really put his grappling to the test, but he also had his grappling put to the test against Callum Lorraine, and Callum Lorraine took him down 6 times. So when we look at this matchup preview, I really like to look at the grappling here, because 81% takedown accuracy for Rinya, 38% for Nathan Fletcher, 100% takedown defense for Rinya Nakamura, 50% for Nathan Fletcher. And look at the submissions per 15 minutes. 1.5 submission attempts per 15 minutes for Rinya, 0.7 for Nathan Fletcher. So I'm going to go with Rinya Nakamura to win here, and I think he needs to really kick it into gear here, and I think you're going to see a Rinya Nakamura submission. That is right, Rinya Nakamura submitting Nathan Fletcher. Yeah, that's what I'm going with. But at the same time, these are 2 younger guys, if you will, 30 and 27. They're young for MMA standards. I do think that Nathan Fletcher could pull off the upset, but I am going to ride with my boy, Rinya Hybrid Nakamura. Loved him since he began. He just needs to get back to his knockout ways, and I think a submission here will put him on the right track. Getting into what I think is either going to close the prelims or open the main card, featherweight action as Danny El Puma Silva takes on Kevin El Chino Vallejos. Danny Silva, 10-1, Kevin, 15-1. This fight is a treat. 4 inches in height for Danny El Puma, 5'11 to 5'7. Also has 2 inches in reach, 70 inches to 68. Both men fight in a switch stance position. Danny Silva, +345, is a big underdog, -470. That is right, Kevin Vallejos coming in. He is a mighty favorite. Danny El Puma Silva, 28 years old from California, is currently riding a 4-fight winning streak. Of his 10 victories, he has gotten 5 by knockout. Other than that, nothing much. Nothing really much. Lost his lone fight by decision. Danny Silva, 2-0 in the UFC. Both of them split decisions. Not really much to be loved, you know. Couldn't put away Lucas Almeida. Couldn't put away Josh Koliabaum. I don't know. You know, I just don't know what to do with Danny Silva. If I'm being honest, he's fought on both Apex cards. He's yet to get out of the Apex, and he ain't getting out here. So Danny Silva, 28. Good for him. Does train at Bloodline Combat with Cub Swanson. So there's a fun fact about him. He's trained with Cub Swanson before. His opponent, Kevin Vallejos, is coming in with a bit more momentum, if I'm being honest. Kevin is 23 years old from Argentina, also riding a 4-fight winning streak. Now, of his 15 wins, 13 finishes, 11 KOs, 2 subs. Kevin is coming in on back-to-back round one finishes. Yeah. Yeah, Kevin has the momentum. He really does. He's actually one of only 5 Argentina fighters here in the UFC, and we're actually going to see another one later on the main card. Kevin took on Cam Teague on Damas Contreras series and finished him in just under 2.5 minutes last September. He also debuted against Sungwoo Choi in March and put him away in 3 minutes with a nasty knockout. Oh my gosh, this dude has power. His only one career loss is a unanimous decision to Gene Silva. That is right. By the way, he landed 71 significant strikes on Gene Silva. He hung in there with Gene Silva throughout the entire fight and actually won a round on every judge's scorecard. So let's not act like Kevin Vallejos isn't pretty freaking good. And you already know we're riding with Kevin Vallejos round one knockout. Let's keep the momentum going. Let's really do. I will be very surprised if Danny Silva wins. Danny has not really done anything to stand out through his first 2 UFC fights. And as for Kevin Vallejos, he has done everything he can to stand out on the Contender Series and in his debut. So Kevin Vallejos, round one knockout over Danny Silva. That is going to be our prediction. With that, we get into a welterweight matchup between 2 veterans of the game as the Asian sensation Neil Magny is back to take on Capoeira Eliseu Zaleski dos Santos. Neil Magny, 29-14, he's hunted. He's hunted with 30. As for Eliseu, 25-9 with 1 draw. You have 4 inches in height for Neil Magny, 6'3 to 5'11, and 7 inches in reach, 80 to 73. Wow. Wow, I did not know it was that big. Orthodox stands for both of our fighters. For some reason, I don't know why, Eliseu is the favorite here. Minus 215. Neil Magny's a plus 180 underdog. I don't even know if I want to get into the fight. I just want to say I'm hammering Neil Magny in this. Like, this has got to be the easiest Neil Magny as an underdog. We're picking him that we've had in a while. But we'll talk about this first. So Neil Magny, recently unranked after losing to Carlos Prates and after Kevin Holland and Daniel Rodriguez have all been having their wins and up downs. So the 37-year-old from Illinois does have 12 of his 29 wins by finish. So not really a finishing machine. 8 by KO, 4 by sub. Of his 14 defeats, he has been finished in 10 of them, including 6 by sub, 4 times by knockout. And he trains at PVP Muay Thai with Muslim Salikov, Miranda Maverick, and Rockwell Pennington. So, Neil, we've known about him for a while. Dude has been with the company since 2013. He actually has the most wins in welterweight history in the UFC. Here's a couple names of the legends that he has fought. Kyung Lim, Damian Maya, Kelvin Gaslam, Hector Lombard, Johnny Hendricks, Rafael Dos Anjos, Carlos Condit, Santiago Ponzinibbio, Robbie Lawler, Michael Chiesa, Jeff Neal, and as of late, Shavkat, Gilbert Burns, Ian Gary, Michael Morales, and Carlos Prates. This dude just does not lose to just anybody. He really does not, and let's not hold him, you know, he's 1-4, he's been knocked down round one in his last 2 fights, they've had him fight Michael Morales and Carlos Prates, the UFC knew what they were doing, they set Neil Magny up to get absolutely trounced, and you know, 2024, he did get knocked out by 2 contenders, but he also finished Mike Mallett, okay, so let's not hold that against him too much. Magny is yet to fight in 2025, so this will be his first fight, but I do think he's hunting very hard for win number 30, and he has a great opportunity to do it here when he takes on Capoeira Eliseu Zaleski dos Santos, 38 years old, somehow older than him, from Paraná, Brazil. He has 18 of his 25 wins by finish, 15 KOs, and 3 subs. Out of his 9 defeats, he's been finished 4 times. Been with the UFC since 2015. He's also fought in some tough names along the way. Nicholas Dalby, Li Jing Liang, Sean Strickland, he holds a win over Max Griffin, Alexei Kunchenko. You know, he's a pretty good fighter, if you ask me. He's also beaten Benoit Saint-Denis as of late, Abukar Nurmagomedov. He actually retired from the UFC, took Renat Fakhrunnaev to a draw. He's been pretty good. Now, 2024, lost the decision to Randy Brown, pretty boring. Then knocked out this guy named Zachary Scrogan, who was like 22, took a fight on short notice, just a really green guy he knocked out. And then last time he fought in March of this year, Chidi and Chukani knocked him out with a nasty knee. I mean, it was bad. I have not seen him ever put out like that. Even when Li Jing Liang finished him, it was nowhere near this bad. So Zaleski dos Santos rushing back after 5 months, looking to get back at it, and we'll see if he can do it here. I don't know if I'm actually going to give this one to him, because Neil Magny, I just think They've just been, Neil Magny's had to fight Michael Morales and Gary, and Carlos Prata has his last four fights. I mean, that's just not fair. That's not fair whatsoever. So we are going to go with Neil Magny to win this by decision. I think a pretty handsome decision. I think he's going to outbox him, land some takedowns, use some clinch work, and he's just such an easy underdog to rock with. So Neil Magny over Elizio's Los Gatos Santos is my prediction. And with that, we get into two of the three fighters ranked on this card. That is right. There are only three fighters ranked on this entire card. And are they heavyweights? No. Are they light heavyweights? No. Are they lightweights? Absolutely not. You get to go to the women's bantamweight division, the best division in the UFC. And oh, some just, guys, I don't know. I just actually have a breaking announcement. I have not looked at the UFC rankings in a while. They removed the women's pound-for-pound rankings. Interesting. This is very interesting. This was updated yesterday. Yeah, they removed the women's pound-for-pound rankings. Huh. I didn't even realize that. Have we even looked at any updates since the last card? I hate to just completely interrupt this, but we have actually a ton of updates. Arnold Allen is actually now ranked number 5. Umar Nurmagomedov is tied at number 1 with Sean O'Malley. Wow. Actually, Max Holloway is now ranked number 3 over Charles Oliveira. Okay, Rainer Day Ritter is ranked number 5. Love to see that. Robert Whitaker is down to 7. Wow. Gilbert Burns is up to 10. Daniel Rodriguez is up to 13. Bogdan Guskov is up to 10. Martin Boudet is up to 12. Tabitha Bitchy is up to 7. Love to see that. Mandy Hibas down to 10. And yeah, son of a gun, you do not have a woman's pound for pound anymore. I think they realized it was kind of a joke, and it's gone. It is all gone now. But getting back on track, the number 10 ranked Carol Rosa takes on the number 12 ranked Nora Canole in the women's bantamweight division. I'm still shocked by that. Wow, that caught me off guard. The things you see live when you're looking at things. Carol Rosa coming in, minus 170, 30 years old, 18-7. Nora Canole, she is plus 140. The underdog, 35 years old, 9-2. 5'7 to 5'5, 2 inches in height for Nora. 67-inch reach for both ladies. Orthodox stance for both ladies. I've always fought in that women's bantamweight for both ladies. Yeah, they're pretty similar. Good matchmaking, I'll give you this. Carol Rosa trains at GAEA with Jessica Andrade and Denise Gomez. Of her 18 wins, she has 6 finishes, 4 KOs and 2 subs, and of her 7 defeats, she's been submitted twice by submission. That's right, of her 25 professional fights, she's gone the distance in 17 of them. Yeah, pretty brutal. She has never been close to getting a finish in the UFC. She has never had a finish in the UFC. She has never, she's gone the distance every single time. Now, of her careers in the last 6 years in the UFC, she has had one outstanding fight. That was against Irene Aldana in December of 2023. It was fight of the night. It was amazing. We loved that. Last time she won, August of 2024, she beat Pan Kianzia. Last time she fought was in January, where Aline Perez defeated her. Look, Carol Rosa started out her run pretty impressive. 4-0 entering the UFC, was on a big winning streak since then. 3-4. 3-4 since 2022. It hasn't been going well. She doesn't really have a chin. She doesn't really have anti-grappling. In fact, I'm perplexed how Carol Rosa even ended up this high in the rankings. And I think this is where she gets knocked down when she takes on Nora Canole. The French lady has 8 of her 9 wins by finish, 6 KOs and 2 subs. She has never been finished of her 2 defeats. And she was actually supposed to fight Haley Cohen on this card. Actually, supposed to fight Haley Cohen at, what was it, UFC 315, I think it was, and Haley Cohen pulled out. So they, what am I looking at here? She fought Haley Cohen at UFC 314. Gosh, the tapeology kills me sometimes. Be careful what sites you guys use to get your UFC notes when you're making your cards and such. She's 3-1 in the UFC with 2 finishes. Most recently finished Haley Cohen in round number 2. I can't believe I'm missed that to some regard, which was pretty funny because Haley literally took her down, controlled her for 4.5 minutes in round 1, and then round 2, she just kept it on the feet and literally just hit her with a nasty, nasty knee, which led to a rear naked choke, and it worked out for her. So Nora, counting off some momentum, her only loss is to Jacqueline Cavalcante by split decision, and I do want to say that Jacqueline Cavalcante is just barely ranked above her at number 11. So we are going to be riding with none other than Nora Canole in this one. Pretty easy pick for me. Carol Rosa is, you know, a favorite. We love picking the underdogs, and Nora Canole is a juicy underdog here. I think she's better. I think we can even see her get a finish. I'm going to go with a round 1 knockout just for the freaking hell of it. Why not? Round 1 knockout for Nora Canole. We have nothing to lose. And whenever I highlight who I'm picking on my prediction sheet, I always usually highlight the wrong person. I elected to highlight the over-under odds for Nora Crinoli instead of her actual name. So, Nora Crinoli, lock it in. Now, we get into what I will describe as the big three. Usually, you have a set number of fights that are the biggest on the card. Maybe it's just the main event. Maybe it's the big two, co-main and main event. In our case, it is the big three. You have three matchups that stand out from the rest of the card. And two of them are your lightweight matchups, which kind of both work equally as co-main events. But third fight on the main card, third fight from the last lightweight division, Elvis Brenner versus Esteban El Gringo Ribovic. Amazing. 16-5 for Elvis Brenner, 14-2 for Esteban Ribovic. 5'10 for both gentlemen, 3 inches in height, actually for reach, I should say, for Elvis Brenner, 72-69, and both men stand in the orthodox fighting position. Elvis Brenner, plus 230, Esteban minus 285. Very good. Very good underdog odds right there. Elvis Brenner, 27 years old, from Sao Paulo, Brazil, trains at the same gym, Shootbox de Lima, as Charles Oliveira. That is right. This dude trains with some good company. Brenner has 3 KOs and 11 subs out of his 16 wins. He was actually supposed to fight Daniel Zaluber in Mexico City earlier this year, but the last time he ended up fighting was in August of 2024. Currently on a 2-fight winning streak, you know, came in the UFC in 2023, 3-0 in 2023. Had one of the best years I've seen. Knocked out Guram Kuladze, beat Zubara Tukolviev, and knocked out Kanan Krujicki in dominant fashion. But then 2024 ran into Mike Dubec Orlbay. Had a great fight. You know, that UFC 301 fight is one of the better fights that we've seen. But then last time out, Abu Dhabi, August 2024, got finished with knees by Joel Alvarez. But Joel Alvarez is a killer. So I don't really want to hold it against him, but I do just want to point that out, that Elvis Brenner has not been on the best run of late, and he's looking to get his first win since November of 2023, when he takes on El Gringo Esteban Ribovic. And Esteban, all action. That's what you can call him. 29 years old, from Argentina, 14 wins, 12 of them by finish, 7 KOs and 5 subs. These two are actually supposed to fight in November of 2023, and Esteban had to pull out, so I think it's just fate that they've ended up fighting here. He's 3-2 in the UFC, wins over Terrence McKinney by knockout. Amazing fight of the night against Daniel Zaluber, was one of the best fights of 2024. And then had a fight earlier this year in March and lost a split decision fight of the night to Nasrat Haqparast. Dude's a significant strike merchant. He's had 3 of his 6 UFC fights go over 100 significant strikes. And you know what? I think he's pretty damn good. I think that Esteban Ribovic is very good. I think Elvis Brenner hasn't fought in a minute. He's going to come in a bit premature, and Esteban's going to knock him out in round number 1. I'm riding with my Argentinians. Francisco Prado freaking failed me, son of a gun. Let's hope Esteban Ribovic does not fail me here. So, Esteban over Elvis Brenner, round 1 knockout. I'm sorry, Charles Oliveira. I am not picking your teammate in this one. The official co-main event up here, Matheus Rebeque and the problem, Chris Duncan, is going down. Matheus Rebeque minus 220, Chris Duncan plus 175. Matheus is 20-2, Chris is 13-2, 5'10 to 5'7, 3 inches in height for Chris Duncan, and a notable 5 inches in reach for Duncan, 71-66, southpaw for Rebeque, orthodox for Chris Duncan. Let's start with a 32-year-old from Poland, Matheus Rebeque. He trains at the Berserker Gym. Thought that was just a dope name, and he trains with a lot of dominant Polish fighters, you know, not really that are known for the UFC, but a lot that are known on the European, especially Polish circuit. Matheus Rebeque has 16 of his 20 wins by finish, 9 KOs and 7 subs, and both of his defeats he has been finished in. Coming in right now, he is currently 4-1 in the UFC, has a knockout of Loic Rabozov, had a submission of Roosevelt Roberts, and then in May of 2024 ran into a fight with Diego Vieira, which was just tough, all right? He was dominating Vieira and lost it with literally 9 seconds left in the fight. Heartbreak. Followed that up, split decision, fight of the night, UFC 308 in Abu Dhabi against Mike Dubec Orlbay. So Matheus Rebeque is coming in off of a win, a fight of the night nonetheless. He's coming in with a lot of momentum. And dude is always in a dogfight. I kid you not. This dude is just always in it. His last two fights have been absolute wars, and I don't think it's going to be any easier here when he takes on the problem, Chris Duncan. Chris is 32 years old as well, from Scotland. Trains at ATT, American Top Team. They have so many gyms all around the world. Dude trains with a lot of legit competitors. 10 of his 13 wins are by finish, 7 KOs and 3 subs, and both of his losses he has been finished in. Knocked out by Vyacheslav Borshev on the Contender Series in 2021, and knocked out by Manuel Torres in February of 2024. Other than that, you know, he's beaten Omar Morales and Yael Ashmaev both by decision. His last two fights on his little two-fight winning streak, both of them guillotine chokes. Last one out in March, he submitted Jordan Vucevic. Actually dominated Jordan Vucevic, if however you say his name. And Jordan Vucevic was a dominant force in Cage Warriors. And, you know, kind of Chris Duncan made him look silly. So Chris Duncan, gonna look to take this one down to the ground if you ask me. But I think Matheus Rebeke has no problem there. We're gonna ride with Matheus Rebeke in this one. I think Matheus is good. I don't really want to hold that one lone decision loss to, not even decision, last second loss to Diego Ferreira. That was just a war. He gassed out. Not much you can do there except work on improving your cardio. So Matheus over Chris Duncan. I'm going to go with a round three knockout. Round three knockout for Matheus Rebeke, probably from a little ground and pound action. But with that, we dive into our main event of the evening, and it has one ranked man, none other than the number six ranked Tatsuro Taira in the men's flyweight division. He takes on the peace of mind, Hyung Sung Park. Tatsuro 16-1, Hyung Sung Park 10-0. Both men are 5'7", 4 inches in reach for Tatsuro 70-66, and both of these young gentlemen stand at the orthodox fighting position. Tatsuro -400 on the odds, +250 for Hyung Sung Park. And this is just short notice. You know, we were supposed to see the number four ranked Amir Albazi, but no, Amir had to go out and get himself hurt or whatever, so Tatsuro will now be left to fight the unranked Hyung Sung Park. Tatsuro is 25 years young, and yeah, dude is fun. Dude is fun to watch. He's from Okinawa, Japan. 12 of his 16 wins are by finish, 5 KOs and 7 subs, and he's fun. He really is fun. He holds finishes over CJ Vergara, Jesus Aguilera, Carlos Hernandez, and his last win in June of last year, Alex Perez. He's actually the only fighter to not only compete in, but to win a main event born in the 2000s. He was born in the year 2000, January 27th to be specific, and he's the only fighter to, you know, fight that was born in that era. Pretty good stuff for him. Last time out, he fought Brandon Rivel to a fight of the night, close split decision. Oh, it was such a good fight. Such a good fight. It was so painful. It's just back and forth. Rival takes round one, then Tatsuro takes round two, then Rival takes round three, then Tatsuro takes round four, and round five is literally 50-50. Could have gone either man's way. Oh, such a fun fight. I absolutely adored that. But Tatsuro came up short. He's looking to get back here in the win category, and I think he has a good chance as he takes on Hyung Sung Park. But Hyung Sung Park, 29 years old, from Gyeonggi-do, South Korea. 9 of his 10 wins are by finish, and they have all came in a row. That's right. He's on a 9-fight finishing streak, undefeated 10-0. He was actually supposed to fight Steve Ersig next week. Fun fact. But instead, Ode Osborne is now fighting him, and now, because Steve Ersig was supposed to fight Alex Perez, Hyung Sung Park stepped in on short notice there. He's now stepping on short notice here. So this is like the third opponent for Hyung Sung Park. It's absolutely ridiculous. Hyung Sung Park, last time he fought, May of 2025, and he got a 2.5-minute rear naked choke of Carlos Hernandez. Yeah, he's fun. Hyung Sung Park's a fun fighter. I actually really like his odds in this one, but there's just no way I'm picking against Tatsuro Taira. Tatsuro is like a little monkey. Once he gets on you, he just crawls all over you and then submits you. That's what he does. So Tatsuro Taira, round two submission. Take it to the bank. Lock it in. Hyung Sung Park is fun. He's feisty. But we're not picking against Tatsuro Taira. I'm a Tatsuro Taira fan. And we know we have a sense of loyalty here on the podcast, which a lot of people don't think we do. We do. You're loyal to Tatsuro Taira. But guys, those are all of your UFC Vegas 108 fights previewed and predicted. A lot. Gosh, a lot more than I anticipated for this card. But yeah, it should be a fun weekend. You know, there's a lot of fun stuff to do. Watch SummerSlam, watch UFC Vegas 108, and check out the Fantastic Four. A lot of good stuff. If anyone has anything they want me to talk about, let me know. I'm open. I'm an open book. There is always stuff to review, to go over. Lots of fun stuff. But yeah, next time we're back, we'll be recapping all of this. Maybe I'll have a new movie to talk about. I actually started watching the Minecraft movie, and it's terribly good. I hate to even say that. But yeah, that's all I got on today's episode, ladies and gentlemen. I will see you all next time. I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.